My subject is about speaking the truth. And obviously, it's David and Nathan we're talking about here after the monumental fall that he had with Bathsheba and his adultery with her. And this is actually very hard. This talk is hard because I'm being called right now to speak the truth as I speak about speaking the truth. And the truth can be very, very challenging. What I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the other references to Nathan as well, because it's not just all about what he did on that day in that place. It's about where he fits in to David's life and why God put him there. So I'm going to be thinking about a lot about Nathan. Who was he? He was a court prophet. He was a close advisor. He was a faithful friend, he was godly, he was an encourager, he was wise, he was humble, he was super sensitive to God's direction, he had permission and authority to speak truth to the king, and God brought Nathan into David's life with precision timing during his darkest and most emotional times. So, the Bible says a lot about clearing up disputes between people, things like that. The Bible tells us to go to a person who has sinned against us and sort it out in Matthew. He tells us that in Matthew 18. But this situation is different, isn't it? In this situation, it's not about Nathan being offended or hurt personally. He's not got to go to that person and say, let's sort this out. It's not that direct thing. But he is aware of David's sin. So although the Bible tells us things like this to Galatians 6 and verse 1, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. That's in Galatians 6 and 1. You know, that's not just a verse about correcting people. It's about gentleness, and it's about looking at yourself as well. There's a necessity for gentleness. God emphasizes this in the Bible. And there's an objectivity that we can get when we look at ourselves and recognize our own weaknesses. When we correct someone, have we looked at ourselves first? John Piper said, if you want to resolve conflicts, deal with yourself 99% of the time. What about logs and eyes, isn't it? So that's really, really important. So the first mention, there are going to be four mentions of Nathan, and obviously the one that we really want to get in under the skin of is the subject of how he confronted him about his adultery with Bathsheba. But first of all, in 2 Samuel 7, 1-7, we read this. After the king was settled in his palace and the Lord had given him rest from all his enemies around him, he said to Nathan the prophet, here I am, living in a house of cedar while the ark of God remains in a tent. Nathan replied to the king, whatever you have in mind, go ahead and do it, for the Lord is with you. And at that night, the word of the Lord came to Nathan, saying, go and tell my servant David, this is what the Lord says. Are you the one to build me a house to dwell in? I have not dwelt in a house from the day I brought the Israelites up out of Egypt to this day. I have been moving from place to place with a tent as my dwelling. Wherever I have moved with all the Israelites, did I ever say to any of their rulers, whom I commanded to shepherd the people of Israel, why have you not built me a house of cedar? And then later, in that chapter, it says, from Nathan, the Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. When your days are over and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, your own flesh and blood, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. Now, the great thing about this first encounter is that we meet Nathan when we see him get it wrong. That's what he's done. He gets it wrong. He's having a nice chat. He's not going as a prophet, he's going as a friend. He's having a nice chat with David. And so David says, you know, oh, I'm living here in a house of cedar, you know. And Nathan says, God's with you, go and do what you're thinking of. And he's wrong. Sometimes godly people get things wrong. Sometimes our favourite speaker gets things wrong. It's very worrying. A Christian idolises a particular teacher so much that that's all they want to listen to. Very, very dodgy ground, because even godly people get things wrong. So we have to test every spirit that comes from every person. But it's not a problem for Nathan, this. He's not embarrassed. He's not ashamed. He sorts it out straight away. But that night, the word of the Lord came to Nathan, saying, go and tell my servant David. And he goes. And he says, actually, no, don't do that, because now I've taken time to listen to God rather than myself. I know it's not right. And God says it's not right. So we first meet him when he gets it wrong, and that should be an encouragement to us, because it doesn't matter how gifted someone is, if we don't, if we can get it wrong, we need to always be going to God for his direction. And David acknowledges Nathan's authority completely. He doesn't say, you got it wrong last time, how do I know you got it right this time? He can sense a different authority when Nathan goes back to him. He can sense God's authority. And trust like that doesn't happen overnight, you know. There's a firm relationship here between Nathan and David. And that relationship allows David to be completely open to the things God says to him through Nathan. So, second mention. The Bathsheba fall, this is the nitty-gritty bit, isn't it? This is the bit that we're looking at. It's quite a long bit, as you can see. So I'm going to go right through to David mourning the death of the child. But just stick with it, and let's enjoy the story. Because there's a story in a story. What's not to like? Samuel 12:1-23. The Lord sent Nathan to David. When he came to him, he said, there were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb he had bought. He raised it and it grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now, a traveller came to the rich man. But the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveller who would come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity. Then Nathan said to David, you are that man. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave your master's house to you, and your master's wives into your arms. I gave you all Israel and Judah. And if all this had been too little, I would have given you even more. Why did you despise the word of the Lord by doing what is evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house because you despised me and took the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your own. This is what the Lord says. Out of your household I'm going to bring calamity on you. Before your very eyes I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you, and he will sleep with your wives in broad daylight. You did it in secret, but I will do this thing in broad daylight before all Israel. Then David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. Nathan replied, the Lord has taken your sin away. You are not going to die. But because by doing this you have shown utter contempt for the Lord, the son born to you will die. After Nathan had gone home, the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife had borne to David, and he became ill. David pleaded with God for the child. He fasted and spent the nights lying in sackcloth on the ground. The elders of his household stood beside him to get him up from the ground, but he refused and he would not eat any food with them. On the seventh day, the child died. David's attendants were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they thought, while the child was still living, he wouldn't listen to us when we spoke to him. How can we now tell him the child is dead? He may do something desperate. David noticed that his attendants were whispering among themselves, and he realised the child was dead. Is the child dead? He asked. Yes, they replied. She is dead. Then David got up from the ground. After he had washed and put on lotions and changed his clothes, he went into the house of the Lord and worshipped. Then he went to his own house, and at his request they served him food and he ate. His attendants asked him, why are you acting this way? While the child was alive, you fasted and wept, and now the child is dead, you get up and eat. He answered, while the child was still alive, I fasted and wept. I thought, who knows, the Lord may be gracious to me and let the child live. But now that he is dead, why should I go on fasting? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him, but he will not return to me. Wow. Can you imagine what happened inside David when he said, Nathan said, you are that man? And you know, this isn't straight after the incident. This is some time later because he'd already taken Bathsheba to his wife and they had a child. Nathan could have gone in all guns blazing, couldn't he? Straight after. He could have gone in there, he had the option to do that. He could have gone up to him and said, what do you think you are doing? But he didn't. Why did Nathan go to David? Have a look at verse 1. Right at the beginning. Yep. Because God sent him. So he didn't go in all guns blazing with his own ideas. He waited for God to send him. And what's he do? He could have gone in with a big lecture, couldn't he, about rights and wrongs and holiness, and quoted all sorts of stuff at him. But he doesn't go in and give him a lecture. He tells him a story. Because God gave him a story. Why a story? Because God gave it to him. He didn't list theological points. He told him the story. You know, we can never impose our convictions on another. Conviction has to be a personal point of arrival. We have to remember that with our children, especially our adult children. You can never impose your convictions on your children. It has to be the point of their personal point of arrival. Because then it's their conviction. You can't give them your convictions. Don't do it. Don't try. And Nathan knew this. So he went in God's way. Not going all guns blazing. God uses the power of story. This is great, as far as I'm concerned, as I write. Look how Jesus communicated. Story, 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 story. Look at the Old Testament. so many stories. Because a story gives a different perspective. It gets over the resistance and defensiveness of a person. Because it's not directly about them, it's a story. And David gained objectivity through this story. That's what stories do, they help us gain objectivity. Because we're thinking about someone else, not ourselves, in the first instance. And so David gained objectivity through this story. That's why personal testimony is so powerful, because it's someone's story. But in verse 13, look, Nathan brings judgment and forgiveness at the same time. See that? He brings, can someone read that for me, verse 13? Actually, verse 13 and 14. Someone read it out? I've dropped my sheet there and I'm not going to fumble to find it.
So David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said to David, the Lord also has put away your sin, you shall not die. However, because by this deed you have given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also who is born to you shall surely die.
Okay, so Nathan brings this terrible news of judgment and consequences, because actions have consequences, but at the same time he brings the news of forgiveness. So often when people correct another Christian, they leave that bit out. They do the correcting. And then think their job's done. So there are some really important questions about this example of Nathan. Do we go to people because God has sent us? Or because we think it's a good idea? Do we go with our thoughts or with God's thoughts? Do we go with our words or God's words? Do we go with our theology or with God's revelation? Now there's a third mention of Nathan. You'll see it in 2 Samuel 12, 24 and 25. Someone read that out for me. Go for it, Jean.
And David comforted his wife Bathsheba, and he went to her and made love to her. She gave birth to a son and then named him Solomon. The Lord loved him, and because the Lord loved him, he sent word to Nathan the prophet to name him Jedidiah.
Did they call him Jedidiah? They stayed with Solomon. That's the name they wanted. You know, Jedidiah means
beloved of the Lord.
Yeah, beloved of the Lord. It means beloved of the Lord. Maybe if they had called Solomon a name that reminded him that he was beloved of the Lord, maybe he wouldn't have been so quick to embrace and follow after the gods of his wives later in his life. Who knows? But we know that they did not take this word from God and through Nathan. Did Nathan hold a grudge about this, do you think? We haven't got a passage to tell us this. But there is a very good sign that he did not hold a grudge or take his love back because he was disappointed with them. We see in 1 Chronicles 3 and 5, I don't think it's on your sheet, that they name, right, David and Bathsheba later name one of their children Nathan. Now, I don't know about you, but when you name a child, you're not going to choose a name of somebody who you feel awkward with or got bad memories of. This week, on Monday, our son Joshua, one of his best mates forever, is a girl, but there's never been anything else in it. They are really good mates. Her name's Barbie, but she's not like Barbie at all. And she's a great girl, and she married Tim, who's a great lad, and he's obviously one of Josh's good friends now as well. And on Monday they had a baby, and they called him Joshua.
Oh.
And so Josh sent me a text on Monday, and he was so excited. He said, "Mom, we've had a baby, and they called him Joshua."
Oh.
Because he knows it's a compliment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that later on, if Nathan had done the prickly, "You didn't listen to me, I'm a prophet, you know, you didn't call that baby what you should have called it." So I just feel a bit cold towards you now. He didn't do that. They would never have named a child Nathan if he had. And so that's a fourth mention of Nathan when he's the baby's name. So this is all really strong stuff, because it leaves us, if we are going to take the example of Nathan when we speak truth, we have got some huge questions to ask ourselves before we do. Ephesians 4:15 says, "Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ." Speaking the truth in love. Did Nathan speak the truth in love? So the first question we need to ask ourselves, why do I feel the need to correct this person? Out of love? Or is it out of annoyance? Or offence? Or frustration? Or my need to be right? Am I in a good relationship with that person? Would they think so? Are these God's words or mine? We must only do straight talking with God-inspired words. Am I aware of my own faults? Am I bringing news of forgiveness at the same time? Is there a story to give? Have I asked for wisdom? Have I earned the respect of this person? And then what about afterwards? If they don't see things the way we felt God wanted them to see things, can I show faithfulness in this disappointment? Can I be patient? Is my love conditional? So it was really interesting, Lou's picture this morning, because I go back to the questions I asked at the end of the specific Nathan story, when he was confronted about his sin. And I think what Lou was saying about which lens are you looking through is important here. If we go to correct someone, which lens are we looking through? Are we looking through our corrective lens, or the way we always see things? We always see things that way, and do things that way. Do we go to people, I'll say it again, do we go to people because God has sent us? Do we go with our thoughts or God's thoughts? Do we go with our words or God's words? Do we go with our theology or God's revelation? Another exciting thing that I'm going to finish with is that a few weeks ago, when I was preparing this, because what I do is I tend to prepare a few weeks in advance, and then just leave it open for God to do some editing. And I hope he doesn't just scribble it all out the night before, because that'll freak me. So I just let him edit it a bit. And at the same time, as I just finished the rough kind of idea of what was coming in this word, Joanne emailed me. And she said that she'd got a word that God had given her for the church. And when I read it, I said, "This is great. Can I share this when I speak?" And I'll put it on M&M's too. It's verses from the Bible that God put on her heart. And the verse before the ones that Joanne sent me is this, Ephesians 4:13. This will continue until we all come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ. That's a higher standard than the example of Nathan. Higher standard. And then these are the words that God put on Joanne's heart. Then, when we are mature and measuring up to the full standard of Jesus, then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown around by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly, as each part does its own special work. It helps the other parts grow, so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. So we'll think it would be good for us to meditate on that this week. I've all put it on M&Ms, because that's what God is calling us to. He's calling us to a life where we are careful with our mouths. We are careful and ask ourselves questions before we go to someone's correcting. And that we just run a little checklist for what is in our heart when we do the correcting.